This is an RNIB Connect radio podcast.
Today, we're joined by actor, playwright and Visually Impaired Creators Scotland, or VICS founder, Kieran Saeed, to talk about loss. Kieran lost her husband Sandy a few years ago and created a play named Sense of Loss to share her experiences and raise awareness of what it's like to lose someone and grieve them as a visually impaired person. She's here today to share her experiences. Hi Kieran, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, nice to speak to you, Amelia.
Can you tell us about your relationship with Sandy and how you met?
Sandy and I met in 2006. Sandy was a performer. An incredible performer. She used to play a keyboard and he busked around London. He was a Scotsman at heart. He always, Scotland was in his heart. And we met doing a show called Cabaret in the Dark with a theatre company called Extant. And we started rehearsing together in rehearsals and then we travelled together and we really got to know each other really well. And we started kind of officially going out with each other in 2006. It was a magical relationship, actually, to be fair. We had the same interests. We both loved detective novels and we were really obsessed with Sherlock Holmes. If you didn't like a TV program that I liked, he would still sit and watch them with me. So we were quite a remarkable team. We moved up to Scotland in 2013 and we got married in that year. And we wanted to set up a company, theatre company for visually impaired people up here, and we wanted to do music up here, and we got a place. It was a magical house we got as well. It was a 5-bedroom house, which sounds amazing for two people, and it had this massive shed at the back, and we were going to soundproof the shed and make that into our sound recording studio. So we had all these amazing ideas and incredible dreams when we moved up here.
And how would you describe Sandy as a person?
He was very tenacious, very determined, and he would be the first to say it. He also was kind of like a bit too laid back sometimes. Incredibly talented, but he sometimes just didn't show off his talent as much as he could. But he had warmth and he had kindness, and he was my fiercest supporter. Good or bad, he would always support me. He was an incredible cook. That was the other thing. I'm rubbish at cooking. And he loved cooking for me. He had great belief in everything I wanted to do. And if I had any troubles, he was a great listener to my troubles. He was just a lovely, warm human being. He was rubbish with money. He would be the first to say it. So, you know, like anybody, he had his good bits and he had his bad bits, but his good bits outweighed his bad bits, really, for me. And he was visually impaired like me as well. And that, some people would think that was kind of like a weakness, sorry, to our couple. We were, you've seen as, you know, two visually impaired people. How are you going to manage life and stuff? But for us, I felt it was a strength because we both understood each other. And that meant that we were a bit like us against the world. And I think that's quite a strong, powerful thing. It meant that we taught a lot of sighted people what it was like to be a visually impaired couple, what it's like to be a strong visually impaired couple. I guess, for me, that was the most important thing. We believed in each other. And there's a rarity that you find someone that is just that special person in your life. It's very hard to find them again.
Yeah, he sounds like such a special person and like you had so many different connections across values and interests. How did you first feel when you found out he was ill?
Well, Sandy, he had cancer of the eyes when he was born, and that's how he became visually impaired. And then he had secondary cancer, which was a bit of skin cancer, and they rectified that. And then he had prostate cancer. Before we got married, we knew that he potentially had this, but we were told he'd got a good while to live. Yeah, it's all right. Treatment's working. It's all good. So we moved up here to Scotland, and the first month was amazing. Sandy was lugging boxes up and down the stairs. He was totally fit, no problems. And then he started getting tired and he started feeling a bit worse for wear and he was not feeling great. And then eventually got really quite ill. And the biggest episode for us was he couldn't get out of the bath one day and I had to pull him out of the bath. and it was a major struggle. And I said, we've got to go to the hospital, because we knew he was getting this treatment for his cancer. And I said, you know, it could be getting worse. And he said, don't be silly. It's not. It's not. It's not. He had a few more tests. And then I was still working in London at the time, and then coming back up and staying with him for like half a week, and then working down half a week or less than half a week sometimes. And it was working out all right. We were doing good. And then in early January, I got a phone call, and I was on the train to come back from London. And it's like, it was going to be a big chunk of time we could spend together, because I hadn't much work at that time. So I thought, great, we're going to have a lot of time together. We can sort some stuff out in the house. It's all going to be good. And then I got a phone call from his niece. I was also our support worker at the time. And she rang and said, Carol, I've got some news to tell you. They've found that the cancer spread. It spread really fast, and it's not looking good at all. It's actually looking quite bad. We don't know how bad it's going to be yet, but she said, I wanted to tell you, and Sandy didn't want you to know because he was a bit worried that you'd be upset, but I felt like you needed to know so you could be upset on the train and have your time to process it. And I absolutely appreciated that she did that. It was really brave of her to do that. And I sat on the train and I did process it. And I got off the train and I got into the house. And the first thing Sandy said was, oh, I'm glad you're home. It's all going to be all right now. You're home. A few days later, we went to the consultants. And the day before we went to the consultants, we flopped all day upstairs. And our support worker brought us food upstairs and really pampered us a lot. And we just made it a really floppy day. And then we went to the consultant the next day. And the consultant obviously saw this visually impaired couple walk through the door. And I think it flummoxed him a bit. Did a couple of tests with Sandy, got him on the bed and did a couple of things and got him back into the wheelchair. He was in a wheelchair at that time. He couldn't walk properly. He just went downhill so fast. And the consultant said, I'm really sorry. And there was a character in Coronation Street at the time called Hayley. And Hayley had cancer and Hayley was dying. I remember saying the night before, well, let's hope it's not a Hayley moment. they'll say they can do something, they can give another treatment. And he said, the consultant, it's a matter of weeks, if not days. I couldn't process it. I didn't know what to do. I just sat there and I said, what do you mean? Is it like the Hayley concept? And he just went really quiet. And I went, oh, no, I'm really sorry. It's nothing to do with Coronation. You know, you just say crazy things at those moments. And we were left on our own. Sandy and I spoke to each other and we chatted to each other a little bit. But Sandy wasn't taking it in either. And then the world just completely changed. And it was all about medical and various things. So our world as visually impaired people is always kind of tough, but this one was really tough because it was all about the medical profession, and the medical profession never deal very well with disability as it is. Disability with illness and terminal illness is quite tough. There were some crazy and funny moments, but it was a tough journey that we went through. And at the time, I thought, I'll never want to go through this journey again with anyone or anything. I don't want to talk about it again. I don't want to think about it again. But it came up to the 10th anniversary. Well, it was coming up to the 10th anniversary last year. And I thought, no, I actually do want to talk more about it. I want to express it. I want to tell people the journey we went through as visually impaired people, the things that were funny moments in these kind of things that were tough. Because unless I tell these stories, how on earth are other people going to then think, I can do something about it? I can deal with something that happened this way. It's not easy, but I feel like it's Sandy's legacy and it's my learning. And those things together make an incredible combination. And I want to support RVI community as much as I can, really.
You talk in Sense of Loss about some of the ways you felt shut out from the final moments of Sandy's life and some of the grieving process because the medical professionals had a lack of awareness. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so death a loss is quite a visual thing. We don't think about it, but it is really visual. People say people look pale, their head will flop. There's lots of visual elements to it. Their eyes go dull. And for me, it was like, that's useless. And then there's lots of machinery that comes along with it, beds and things that you press the buttons and things, and they're all kind of visual. They've got touch screens. It's not easy to manage. All the drugs you have to give people to help along process and make things easier. All of that stuff's not easy. It can be quite hilarious because nurses can just say all these things like, well, you can do it this way and that way. And they'll wave their hands about and you kind of think, no, I actually need you to let me feel it. And I need you to let me give me time. And I did quite a few things after Sandy passed away to make things accessible. So one of the things I did was I created a video, a film with cancer research about the top few things that people should do to support people who are going through a cancer journey, things they should think about, accessible information, describing a space, speaking to the person. Oh my goodness, let's talk to the person, not to the support worker or the family or the friend who's with them, because they're a pair of eyes you can look at and the eyes will look back at you. No. Actually, please, I might not be looking at you, but I am the one who's having to process the information along with my visually impaired husband. So please look at us. Thank you. And all of those things. And then I thought, actually, I want to make a play. I want to tell a story. So I set my story at Christmas time. Christmas time is actually December, is the time when most older people pass away. So I created this story during December time, and I created a podcast meets play, and I wanted to create top 10 tips. And I created these tips of things that you should do or think about or just let go of when you're going through the process. I felt that if I'd had those tips, then I think I could have managed things a lot better. I could have done things a lot better. I would have been a bit more prepared. I don't think we ever are fully, but I just would have had a lot more awareness about stuff. It would have been easier. It's never easy to lose somebody you love deeply. It's never going to be easy. But if you have some processes and systems and things that you know how things are going to happen, it can be easier.
And after Sandy passed away, did you feel like there were people you could turn to who understood your experience, or did you feel like you dealt with things mostly on your own?
A lot of stuff I had to manage on my own. I had an amazing support worker, Julie. She was incredible. She really understood because she was connected with Sandy and we had that powerful connection. But the rest of it was quite hard. It was, you know, I just moved up to Scotland. I didn't know anybody. There aren't many groups. I still think I always want to set up a group for visually impaired widowers and widows. I was a very young widow. I'm 55 now, so I was 45 at the time. I was like, wow, that's like quite young to lose someone. Didn't have any children either, so I don't know things that I could look back and say, oh, there's a mini Sandy. And none of that either. So it was difficult and it was lonely. I think the visually impaired community can be really supportive, but we are all fearful to say the wrong things when somebody loses somebody. Yeah, how are you doing? I'm not doing very good, actually. I've had a rubbish day today. I was like, couldn't get to sleep last night, cried all night. But you can't say all of that, because if you say that to people, people can't really react to it very well. But actually, you know what you should really say to somebody who's losing somebody? It's like, okay, I know you're not doing great. And if you are, that's good. But if you're not, chat to me. And if you feel really rubbish, say you feel rubbish. And let's be that rubbishy together. Let's share that and be with it. And I think we just aren't very good at doing that. And I think as human beings, we need to do that a lot more. And as visually impaired people, we need to reach out to other people and say, like, that person's quiet in the room, talk to them. Doing a first aid course, and somebody once said to me in the first aid course, don't go to the person who's moaning and screaming a lot, because they're okay. They're reacting to their wounds and they're reacting to stuff. Go to the person who's most quiet, because they're the most one in pain. And as visually impaired people with It's not easy to find groups. There aren't many out there. It's always on the internet and the Facebook, and I'm a bit technically challenged. So I struggle to find stuff, and then I just created my own little network. And as time's gone on, I've got some wonderful friends. You learn to live with it. You learn to manage this little shadow behind you, and you learn to hold its hand, be with it when you're sad, smile with it when you're happy, and learn to be happy as well, because that's the other thing. I found it very hard to be happy. I lost the most important thing in my world. But actually, as time went on, I thought, he wants me to be happy. He wants me to be successful. He would want me to be living the dream. And when you start coming to that terms, that's when it becomes easier. But it takes time. And you'll still have moments. I think you still have moments.
Yeah, and it sounds like it was really hard to also grieve the future that you'd planned with him, which I guess has some parallels to the grief that some people with sight loss might experience, as they have to grieve their planned futures and learn how to adjust in that way.
I agree with you. I think there is the grief of losing your sight is quite tough as well. It's really tough. You have this old dream. It's everything. Anything to do with loss of any kind is tough because you have this future in your head. But hey, none of us know that future would have been the best future for us. None of us can predict that. It could turn out that the hard thing that happened to us becomes the best thing that happened to us because that becomes our future. So none of us can predict all of that. But all we can do is cry when we need to cry, laugh when we need to laugh, and listen when we need to be listened to. And listening means you really listen. You don't just go, oh, yeah, I understand. It's you really listen and you give people that time and space. And if anything we are very good at as visually impaired people, we are very good at listening because we have to listen to navigate the space we're in or concentrate on something, or we just enjoy listening for audio description and stuff. And we should use that skill to our best of our ability and really, really listen. For me, grief and loss has been always been tough. It's not an easy journey. And I'm still going on that travels. I'm not unpacking that rucksack by any such means. It's probably a third unpacked. But what I have learned to do is that load is lighter because I've unpacked a third of it. And I feel that I can now share stuff and explain things to people in a way that I could never explain before. And I hope that even if one person gets something, like one of my tips was go with the flow. Like when you're in that moment and you're losing everything and everyone's taking things over, just go with it. Let go. Don't worry about it anymore. I think if I can even just give that one tip to somebody, and somebody who's going through it right now and is listening to it and thinking, you know, I've lost my sight, or I've lost the person I've loved, or I'm going to lose the person I've loved. I think if that one little bit of advice touches somebody, Sandy has lived on, and that makes my dream come true.
And where can people learn more about Sense of Loss and VIX as well?
We're hoping to revamp Sense of Loss probably next year sometime. And just look up VIX, look up Visually Impaired Creators Scotland. And we've got a website, so just look us up and find out more about us and join us and be part of our team. And the more visually impaired people that can tell their stories and the more people and artists we can support, the better for everybody. And then we stop feeling alone in our lonely journeys of loss or fear or whatever we worry about, and we become stronger.
Good Company on RNIB Connect Radio.